world. But to change the world in a way that means anything, it's slow, it's methodical.
Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficical podcast for Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 10, titled Episode 2.8, Hidden Process.axx. What do you think of this episode?
I hate Philip Price and everything, every minute he's on the screen. Everything else is pretty dope.
He's the ultimate supervillain.
Annexing
countries to China, and he's too much of a... an over-the-top villain for you.
Yeah, he's not even a Bond villain. Yeah. Like, he's some kind of fucking delusional god emperor, and it's not a good look for the show or that character. And
yeah.
But, on the other hand, the people that actually can get shit done, the Dark Army, got shit done this episode, and I thought that was fairly thrilling.
It was, yeah. I liked most of this episode. I'm with you. I have problems on that first scene there with Terry Colby and Philip Price. I have... other minor problems, but overall, I thought it was a pretty good episode. Pretty strong.
I got an email, like, within seconds of the episode ending from Casey H. Says, I don't know if it's good or bad that I want to say, fuck you, Mr. Robot. And I'm like, is that a Rust Cole True Detective? Fuck you?
Right.
Or is that, like, a Bunk from the Wire? Fuck you. Like, I...
in, like, what part of Mr. Robot? Because there...
That's the whole email. But I can see, because it's like, you know, they really twist you up, and then they leave you with this, I mean, I don't want to say it's cliffhanger, except for you don't know whom of Cisco and Darlene and who else got killed in that diner.
I think we know.
I know, there's been some pixel-based analysis of...
yeah.
That we'll probably talk about when we get there, but... yeah, I don't know. It definitely got me super invested by the end of it. I just really worry that this... I just hope that Philip Price ends up being some delusional sock puppet that's done away with as soon as White Rose no longer needs him.
Right.
Because at least with her, there's some mystery and some humility and some, you know, understanding of the shadowy world they walk on, where Philip Price is just...
there's also some delusion. I mean, thinking that you can control everything because you manage your time well,
sure,
is a little insane.
But, sure, but that's a little bit smaller scope than need to be the most powerful man on the planet.
I want
to
be, like, God, and
what does that even mean? And he says, like, I'm there except for one or two. I'm like, can you assassinate citizens in China with impunity? Because if you can't, you're not definitely as powerful as White Rose and that entire Dark Army apparatus. Like.
Right.
What does it mean to be the most powerful man on the world?
Good question. Let me describe this scene and let's talk about it a little bit more. So we start off with Terry Colby stopping by Philip's office with a copy of his new book.
The last Honest Man.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Philip asked Terry to pull some strings to get Obama to annex the Congo for China.
Yeah.
Terry wants to know why Philip does all this, and Philip says, basically, to sum it up, it's... to leave the greatest legacy of all time.
Sure.
One that is not even surpassed by God. I don't know how he plans to do that, being a product of his God. But, okay,
I would
sure.
love to know what's going through Sam Esmail's mind when he's writing this dialogue. Because it's... And I don't know. Like, maybe people with this mindset are really like this. Like an Alexander the Great types.
And this might very well be his undoing.
The only movie, like, you know, the only movie I know of about Alexander the Great sucked too. So, like, maybe you just can't make a good story about this kind of self-aggrandizing persona.
It's
but
very hard to relate to.
Yeah, like, because to me, it's like, there is no way anyone can be the most powerful person in the world. It's all relative, and it's very rock, paper, scissors. And if you're powerful in this sphere, you're going to be weak in the other. And, like, why
is,
if you're
yeah.
so smart and fucking Machiavellian, why don't you understand that?
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I like I said, this show is kind of broadly in my political ballpark, but I fucking hate it every single time they touch on the politics. It reminds me a lot of The Newsroom in that way.
Right.
Could you pat yourself on the back any harder? Like, don't break your arm or throw your shoulder out of socket. I don't know. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm imagining at least one of those two rooms to be a room with Elliot. Let's say.
Yeah.
Put him in a room with a bunch of hackers. They can ruin his life if
sure.
they choose to.
They have.
Right. And they're, you know, that's arguable. I mean, he's still doing all right, more so than most people in this fictional universe. But,
right.
Yeah. you put him in a baseball game,
right?
And he's probably going to be the least powerful person in that room.
Sure.
There are a lot of just different scenarios in which that doesn't hold true, and I guess by his judge of power, he perceives himself to be the most powerful man in the room,
right,
at all times.
And I guess I would like for this conversation to have any kind of texture and meaning. I would need him to define that,
right?
You know, I guess that was one of the appeals about, like, you know, this seems to be getting a lot of comparisons to Breaking Bad on the subreddit and not, but what define, you know, I just felt like I had a much better handle on the villains and even the anti-heroes in that show. Like, they, by the time they were making grandiose statements about they're the one that knocks and, you know, all that kind of stuff, you kind of knew exactly how they defined power and where you agreed and disagreed. Where this guy is just a bunch of megalomaniacal speeches that have no real, you know, texture from one to the other. I mean, I don't know. It was like season one's like, oh, it's just business. Now it's I must attain godhood. Like, what are you?
It does seem like the further down that road he goes, the more he offends White Rose, or the more he makes himself he poses himself in opposition to her. So
I mean, even the last honest man, who was kind of like the main villain of last season, is like, well, isn't this a little too much?
Yeah,
like, literally saying that, and I'm like, yeah, yeah.
No, it might be a step too far, and I don't know if it's a step too far for China in general, or if it's going to be just a step too far for Philip.
Right.
Because he seems like he's going to be pretty detached from this ultimately, right? Yeah. He's asking Terry to ask a guy to ask Obama to do this favor.
Yeah.
I don't know how this comes back on him in any significant way, other than maybe if he doesn't get it done, White Rose is going to be pissed.
Right. I think a lot of people are like focusing on the China annexing the Congo angle, although that is something that's been on the table since the very end of last season. And, you know, if you've been paying attention, just talking about the Congo and the mines, and we've talked about how, like, this is the number one source for cobalt and a few other rare earth materials, and how that could be sent. I'm not sure exactly how, but I've been told that, you know, if you bombard these with the right type of nuclear radiation and make the right type of isotopes, you can make dirty bombs or nuclear weapons.
And it's also a source of a lot of minerals for a lot of the electronics we
high
use
tech
in every day.
Chips. So
right,
this is just the third step reveal. So, like, you know, everybody, hey, focus on the this is the important. This is really super important.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I guess that also this is kind of based in reality because China and the United States are butting heads over to Congo. So they're doing a lot of real life, you know, injecting their narrative in a lot of real life events.
I was reading, I guess France is one of the big blockers in Africa. Like, France it's has their
the
fingers in Africa pretty deep. But I do really like the transition out of this scene with that song, because you do get this unhinged feeling from Philip and then this just absolute maniacal song comes on.
Yeah, I Shazammed it, and the song apparently is called Bleach, and everything else was in Kanj. I couldn't tell you if it was Korean, Japanese, Chinese. It's some kind of probably Japanese metal band, I guess.
Sure, I have no idea.
But yeah, it was completely unintelligible.
Yeah, but it's just a bunch of screaming and fast
thrashing,
thrash
guitars,
metal.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's really good coming off of this guy just saying these insane things. And then going to Joanna, who we also think is maybe a little bit unhinged.
She's crazy.
She's getting all dolled up to meet Elliot at his place, as we saw at the end of last episode. She takes him to her house and tells him about Tyrell's history of giving her gifts, with the story about fucking a girl for her earrings and bringing those back as a trophy. And then tells Elliot that he's going to help her find Tyrell with this phone that he gifted her. And he, you know, tries to say no, but the
government issue
face
man
is there.
Block the door with his rubber face.
Yep. I wonder, I couldn't help but notice, like, and this has been true of every scene he's been in before this, but for some reason it hit home in this scene, is when Christian Slater is pacing around this room, like stalking around like a lion. I wonder what kind of pranks he plays on people. I wonder how many shots he's ruined by, like,
having his
wearing
dick out.
A rubber nose or sure. Sure.
That's the Slater. They call it the Slater.
Yeah.
It's like they think it's an awesome take. Oh, God damn it. He's had his dick out this whole time. Cut, cut, cut.
Right. Or just like, you know, trying to get people to crack up.
Sure.
I bet behind the scenes there's some pretty good stuff.
What so
because they can't react to him in any way.
Yeah, right. Except for Joanna, who apparently can tell he's in the room, which is interesting.
Well,
okay,
I don't know about that.
True or false? This episode furthers the idea that Tyrell and Mr. Robot are, if not one and the same, very connected. Like I think, what do you mean by very connected?
Like buddy buddy or
No. Like I'm now officially promoting the idea that Mr. Robot and Elliot and Tyrell are all aspects of the same person. And I think this statement of like I feel like she can see me is a statement of that, that's a hint towards that truth.
Okay.
And I haven't got all the details figured out. I'm just saying, like, if I'm dealing with a man who can stay up for 7 days on amphetamines, I think I can. I think I can find it in my heart to see this guy carving 8 hours to have a completely separate and secret life. Like he's lived his life in 8 hour shifts. Like he's got the Elliot shift, and then the Mr. Robot shift, and then the Tyrell shift.
So, I mean, what kind of relationship do they have at this point?
Because
I mean, Tyrell at this point would be standing right in front of Joanna, right?
Well, except for he's somehow Mr. Robot tried to suppress him by shooting him at some point.
I mean, like physically, visually.
Oh, I don't know that. I mean, like I said, I don't think Tyrell's in the room right now. I think Tyrell is still actively suppressed, and he's only coming out through these phone calls.
And so she's speaking in metaphor. She's like, "I need you to find Tyrell."
Yes, she's aware, like, just like
she sees the physical.
I mean, we don't think it's
of...
weird that Angela goes up and asks her Mr. Robot or says Elliot, who are you seeing now? Because she's aware of his affliction. So why do we think it would bizarre that Joanna, in her playful, crazy way, would do the same with Elliot?
I don't necessarily think it's bizarre.
The other less extreme, the weak.
I don't know.
The weak statement of that is that when Mr. Robot shot Tyrell, somehow Elliot fused his personality, and now that is part of his psyche that wasn't there before. That's right. A pretty easy one to argue and defend.
Sure,
but I'm going to go just for shits and grins. I'm going to go with the. I bet we're going to have a reveal that Tyrell, Mr. Robot, and Elliot are been the same person this whole entire time.
Okay, I don't know that I'm willing to follow you there. I think
that's fine. It's crazy. Like this is Joanna level crazy theory right now.
Right.
But it's you know, was Tyrell level crazy just an episode before?
That's true.
Maybe by next episode it'll be Philip Price level crazy.
Is that more or less crazy? I don't even know at this point.
I don't know. They're crazy. It's like, you know, who's the craziest man in the room? It depends on how you define crazy.
That's true.
That's the other thing. It's like when Sam Esmail's writing Joanna's dialogue, does he have like a hat that he pulls things out of? Like when on our first date, first example could have been saw a crazy hot redhead with cubic zirconium earrings and I needed you to fuck her to get them for me. Or there was a homeless person eating a half-eaten sub outside, I need you to smack it out of his hand and beat him to death. Or there was a baby on the sidewalk, I need you to smut. Like,
what are they playing Mad Libs in the writers?
It really feels like it, because none of this. I have no perspective on why these characters are the way they are.
Sure,
and I still have a lot of antipathy from season one and from what I've seen in season two. It's the biggest problem. The villains in this show don't make any sense outside of White Rose, which is still pretty. You know, she's pretty hard to latch on to, but they've actually humanized that character and given him some real pathos. Mm-hmm. Whereas these Tyrell and Joanna and Philip are just fucking one-dimensional caricatures.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like the more power you gain in this universe, the more crazily you're portrayed.
Right.
I guess the more maniacal you become.
Right.
I don't know about theory, but
she's just so bemused and playful when she's talking to Elliot and you know, what'd you think of her unhooding him and, you know, doing that? Do you really want to say no to me? Cause that's obviously works from the, like, I'm dangerous and also you want to have sex with me kind of thing.
Right. It's both, alluring and also very scary, very intimidating. So I think that's just what they were going for there, showing both sides of her.
Right on.
In this one moment. But I am on a different path with Tyrell. I do think I'm going a little bit more with the straightforward reading of Mr. Robot was lying about Tyrell, causing Elliot to, you know, maybe not hear and see things that didn't happen, but have false memories.
Yeah.
I think that's certainly within Mr. Robot's power, and I think it makes a lot of sense here.
Yeah, for sure. That's...
But it's text here. I mean, they're telling us that, right? I mean, Elliot later on says, did Mr. Robot lie to me?
Right.
Like, I don't know that I want to trust that, especially because it's coming directly out of Elliot's head, which we know is not reliable.
Right.
So, I don't know, man. I'm still up in the air on this Tyrell thing, and it's not coming down until I see Tyrell on the screen.
Okay.
And even then... I got excited because during this
later point where he invites us to fully Dora the Explorer, do you see that moment?
Like, yeah.
When he spun around, I see this guy in a suit sitting on the couch, and I'm like, holy shit, Tyrell's right there. And I'm like, oh no, that's government issued face man after I got super excited. Because I'm like, he was alone and I forgot it. But I'm like, oh my God, he's seeing a blurry vision of his own split psyche. And so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't wait to see what you make of that. This is the first episode that Reddit has that there is no, like, there's definite Easter eggs that have not been cracked.
Yeah.
These were tougher, thicker shelled ostrich egg type Easter eggs.
And I think they need to be if you're going to point them out in the show. Yeah. You're going to say, solve this puzzle.
Right.
Internet.
But this is the first one that seems to confirm. I mean, I can tell, when we get there, we can tell you like the current leads. But there has been nothing conclusive so far.
Right. Okay, let's get a little closer to that. Sisko and Darlene try to decide what to do with Vincent, the guy that Sisko found on Susan's couch last episode.
Were you kind of bummed that it turned out to be Vincent? It wasn't Mobley, it wasn't Trent, it wasn't...
It didn't seem like as important of an event.
Yeah.
Even though I guess it did ultimately lead to Sisko being killed. I mean, it's not...
I don't know.
It doesn't feel as important with just Vincent.
It bums me out retroactively because I feel like the cliffhanger was horseshit. Like, Vincent's not cliffhanger worthy. This is just a bait and switch.
Right. Right. I wonder if by the end of the season we will find out what happened to either or Mobley or Trent.
I don't know. I think so.
I hope so. Anyway, he's badly hurt. Darlene doesn't want to take him to the hospital, but Sisko guilts her into it with some effort. It takes a little while to crack that shell here.
Do you buy this version of Sisko as the kinder, gentler? He's the Dark Army acolyte that had a needle shoved up his finger just a couple episodes ago. Do you buy him as the one telling Darlene that we need to help this guy? It seems like he just preys on insecurities more than he actually has a successful argument here. Because I guess,
right? Yeah,
when Bane says, you know, the fire must rise, brother. They expect two bodies on the. It implies that like Bane is an important character, and that him surviving is more important than any of his lackeys.
Mm-hmm.
Where Sisko's advancing the argument of you are not Bane. You're not special. You're not bred in the darkness to do this thing. You are essentially a vandal that got lucky. Mm-hmm. And is that accurate? Like, if F Society gets rolled up, does the F Society mission run on? Or do
it doesn't
they...
feel like it unless Dark Army takes that up.
It just
but...
it seems like there would be so many copycat. Like, someone saying that this thing is possible it almost makes it possible. That, like, you know, they've empowered these people and everyone's got the faces on, and F Society is this popular movement that...
I mean, we saw that with Anonymous, right? In the real world.
Sure.
That's kind of what happened, is a small group did a thing and then people started to run with that.
Right.
Other
and
hackers.
Everybody does it, and not maybe the original Anonymous don't agree with all the goals of the new Anonymous, but it doesn't matter because it's all,
right. Yeah.
You know, this amorphous thing. I don't know. I kind of feel like Sisko's got the right of it here.
Oh, I mean, I agree. I think this is the right thing to do. I do think that... So we haven't really seen Sisko have to make these life or death decisions, right? I mean, he was spared the Susan Jacobs decision. This is the first time he's had to really grapple with the idea that he might kill someone directly.
Does it just seem like he was joined the Dark Army as kind of like he thought it was cool to do and didn't really understand the stakes involved and how dangerous it was? Although, even in season one, he's talking about how dangerous these people are. So...
Yeah, I wonder what he means by danger there. Does he realize, they're going to kill us? It seems
he
like...
He does now.
It seems like, certainly now he does. But it seems like early on, like in the mid to end of season one, he was realizing that, certainly. Because, I mean, he comes to Darlene later on and says if they even think that, you know, that was early this season, I think.
Yeah.
If they even think that the FBI is onto you, they'll kill you.
Right.
So he clearly knows who he's dealing with. He just... I never felt like he was completely affiliated with the Dark Army. It was more like he's a guy who, like you said, got into it because he thought it was cool and then got in too deep and now can't get out.
So the one thing I would say negative about this take about Darlene not being special is maybe Darlene isn't special.
Mm-hmm.
But Elliot, I think the show is making an argument when Philip says, you know, there's two rooms that he's not the most powerful man in. My mind goes to White Rose and Elliot. Those are, you know, two people in the room where he's not as powerful as those people. That implies that Elliot is someone special in his ability to do the things that he can do.
Yeah.
Darlene's very important to Elliot. It's arguable that if something happened to Darlene bad, that it would make Mr. Robot incapable of going on. So maybe she is important.
Maybe. Yeah.
To this particular effort.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, you know, this whole hack spawned from their relationship.
Sure.
When they were kids, right?
Right.
And it's kind of one of the things that motivated him. So, yeah, I think she is important in that sense. That,
okay.
That to Elliot, who is kind of important to the overall plot, that, yeah, she's important.
Okay.
So, Dom investigates Susan's house, and they just barely missed Cisco. Apparently, he was there that day, and then he took Vincent out of there that day. But they do get a description of him from a neighbor who saw him get into a cab with Vincent.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of on to him at this point.
And they're also, I don't know whether this is to pacify the crowd that's saying that the FBI is dirty, but they make a lot of statement appeals to the FBI, or the real-life FBI director, Comey, being ultra-aggressive at pursuing these. And that, you know, when Dom comes in, the first thing she's like, so we find these people and we instantly burn the house? What the... I mean, she doesn't know the house has already been burned.
Yeah.
But who knows? Like, back. If they keep, you know, fucking Vincent stumbled in here after his run from the law in Maryland, maybe more. That seems sound practice. But for whatever reason, the FBI is wanting to move fast, fast, fast.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make you feel better or worse about the FBI guys being kind of dirtier on the take? Like, you can art.
That sounds a little bit better, yeah. But yeah. By the end of the episode, I'm back to dirty man.
Yeah, I just don't know. Because the one... Well, I'll wait to make this point when we get to that point.
Okay. Elliot observes the carnage of the 5-9 hack in the streets as they drive, and he tells Joanna's goon, government-issue face man, that he needs to stop at Micro Center for some hacking hardware. And he's kind of having a very minor back and forth here with Mr. Robot.
Mm-hmm.
Nice mention of Micro Center. That's kind of the place you'd go to get all this stuff, I guess.
Sure.
Get those around here.
They have a big one.
Yeah.
Over there in Springdale or whatever.
I guess it started here.
Did they?
Yeah, Micro Center.
Interesting.
They're comparable to Fry's for people out on the West Coast.
Huh.
I don't know if they have Micro Center out there now. But
I think they're a lot more focused than Fry's.
Okay.
Like, if you took the electronics and computer section out of Fry's and built it a standalone thing, and that's the only thing they did, then that's a pretty good understanding of what it is. Like, they don't sell washers and dryers and TVs and telescopes and
right.
Drones.
Micro Center doesn't sell those.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair. So then Dom takes the composite of Cisco to her boss, and he decides to put that composite on the news to catch him, put out a bolo on him. Even though Dom explains that the Dark Army will kill him if they realize the FBI is snooping around, her boss says contact the cab companies and see if they know where Cisco went that night. Of course! Of course, boss, you contact the cab companies. It's the first thing you do.
Right.
When you hear that he got into a cab. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
But I think he's got, like, I've got a lead. Here's the person's already following up. That's what makes me think, like, I can't tell if he's dirty because he does seem like he's just following the FBI's policy. And if this guy's, like Director Comey's got to be dirty as well. I don't know. Did you get... is this the first time I've heard Mobley's real name, Sunil Markesh? Because I had to look that up. I'm like, who the fuck is Sunil Markesh? Oh,
I think
it's
it
Mobley.
Might be. Yeah, first time.
Yeah. I don't know. But here's the thing. I remember being utterly convinced that Special Agent in Charge Merker from Breaking Bad was all up in Gus and his lackey. And
it's dirty.
All of that turned out to be completely untrue.
Yeah.
And it turns out someone can really be that blinded and gullible and ignorant and plausibly so.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm a little gun-shy about calling this guy dirty when it seems like they're giving a lot of cover for him in the episode that he's just doing what the you know, and also that's kind of United States playbook. Mm-hmm. Like, we want results. We want them yesterday. We don't give a shit about if it actually is going to solve the problem. Like, attempting to solve the problem, having the appearance of solving the problem, is more useful for politicians than actually solving the problem.
Right.
Which explains a lot of society's ills.
And that's the key to it, is this guy also really wants to look like he's doing the right thing here.
And think about what all the congresspeople's attitudes would be when those bronze balls got dropped in the Senate chambers, or... Now everybody has got their fucking ego involved, and like, not only have they knocked us on our ass, but now they're fucking making dick and ball jokes. Like, everybody would be down their throats. Like, why aren't you making this go away? Why aren't there arrests made? Why? So it kind of makes sense that there would be this pressure to get like generate a bunch of smoke and movement and heat, but no real solutions.
Yeah, and there would also be this divide between these two people. I think they're at different levels of this organization, right? One level is all about getting the job done. Dom doesn't care that he wants it to look good for the public or for the politicians.
Right.
She just cares about getting these people behind bars.
Sure.
Whereas he's, you know, like, I don't know what level he's at here. He's clearly like running some kind of local branch of it.
Right.
But he's got a responsibility to also the public, right?
Right.
Which is different from Dom's position. So you can see how they'd have different takes on this, legitimately.
Dom is like McNulty, and the boss is like the, you know, police commissioner from The Wire. Like, they both see things and have very different pressures and very different, like, reward mechanisms.
Right. But you can also see if they can get to the deputy director of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, maybe they can get to the FBI.
Because we're pretty sure on that.
I mean,
are we?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, she had an awful lot of information about Angela and just the way she was speaking. I'm with Angela on that.
I am too, but it's not a certainty. It could be a misdirect due to paranoia.
But if you assume that they can get to her, then they can probably get to this FBI, this mid-level FBI guy.
I agree with that.
So, let's move on to Elliot shopping at Micro Center. He gets a call from the phone, or on the phone that Joanna gave him, and when he answers, Mr. Robot disappears, and Elliot hears breathing on the line.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Other altered personality disappears when the other altered personality shows up, eh? Is that what you're saying to me? I mean, I think this is the best evidence that however he began in this world, the Tyrell now is living inside Elliot's head.
Okay. At this point,
there's only room for two of them, one of them to manifest at a time.
Well, my first question would be then, how would you explain the idea or the scene that we saw with Joanna hearing this exact same thing on this phone without the presence of Elliot?
I think Elliot is the one making the phone call
to himself at this point. So he's calling up himself and breathing.
Well, you don't have to explain how when Elliot's in the same room. That's like saying, like, is Christian Slater, is he materializing an actual body and manipulating it via telekinesis? No, that's just a figment of his imagination. I think this is all taking place in his head.
Okay.
Because also, the other thing that reinforces that is he gets a phone call. Not only does Mr. Robot disappear, but everyone fucking disappears. Like, the store is empty.
Right.
Showing that he's, like, entering a delusional state here. So, like, did the phone even fucking ring? Was it Angela trying to get a hold of him initially? You don't really know.
Sure.
It can't be Joanna. It can't be Angela because this is Joanna's phone.
Yeah.
But I just feel like they're. Why would you do it? Why would you have Mr. Robot go away? Why would Elliot draw so much audience attention to that if that wasn't very significant? And then what is the significance of it if not? It goes into the NIT 5, which talked about. The last title implies that you were running in single user mode. Now you're running in multi user mode. So this is Tyrell's identity trying to break out.
There was that one scene where Elliot's in jail. Well, he's in his mom's house, and he gets a phone call from Tyrell, and Mr. Robot is also there.
That is true.
So I don't. I don't know if that says anything about...
He was still in a knit mode one.
Right. I have no idea if that says anything about it.
But clearly, I don't think the understanding is completely correct, but
So Mr. Robot doesn't have to disappear here if this is Tyrell and it's all in Elliot's head. Because he didn't the last time that Elliot heard Tyrell.
A lot of things have changed in their relationship.
That's true. Yeah.
Like they've declared a truce. You know, the init states have changed, and I'm making that kind of like a joke, but I also think that's a serious thing. Like the show is trying to tell us something metaphorically about, you know, how fractured Elliot's psyche is. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm just
Now that they've made that truce, he and Mr. Robot are more connected, and so this third personality can't come through when Mr. Robot's around.
Right.
I don't know. It's impossible to say, honestly.
They're also working this cryptocurrency angle more and more blatantly.
They are. Yeah, I saw this coming.
Sure. Well, in
the beginning of the season.
Yeah, when they had the e-coin, and then Darlene used it to bribe the pet incinerator guy, and now they're talking about using it in place of credit cards.
It's an obvious trajectory. Because, like,
it's funny because that if that's
E-Corp's... And I don't mean obvious in a negative way. I just mean it makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Given E-Corp's goals.
And also, given E-Corp's goals, it makes me feel like they're playing checkers while the Dark Army's playing chess. Because they're trying to do Faustus cryptocurrency on the world. Dark Army's trying to fucking build doomsday weapons, apparently.
Sure. That sounds like a plausible
thing they're doing. Cool cryptocurrency, dude. Mm-hmm. Here comes Terminator 2 kind of thing.
Yeah. We'll see how that plays out. So, I mean, I do have some general feelings on this episode, or on the season more as a whole, but I wonder if I should save those for, like, a wrap-up cast. Because the way I've been feeling lately about this show is season 2 has been getting a little lost, whereas season 1 was a little more focused. I really liked the goal that was pushing season 1, which was the hack. Mm-hmm. We got to get this in place. We got to make sure it's done. All of the stuff that they were trying to do was trying to further that goal.
Right. Where the goals feel more nebulous and fluid.
They are. They're very fluid. And
reactionary.
F-Society's on the defensive. Yeah.
It's very Empire Strikes Back, right?
Sure.
The Rebels struck. Now the Empire's coming back, and the Rebellion has to run from them and go to Hoth and get chased from Hoth and get their arms cut off and all kinds of shit.
Yeah. So I just wish there was a bigger goal that they were trying to attain here. I guess I wish that, like, stage 2 had not been set up this season, but rather executed this season, and it was the main thrust of the plot.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm fine with the good guys being scattered and having to be play reactionary for a while. That can be interesting too. I will just say that, like, I felt like everything came into focus for Mr. Robot season 1 and around episode 8, and then I thought the final two episodes meandered a bit. This is kind of the opposite, where beginning was incredibly strong, but there was a stretch in the middle where there's a couple episodes where I'm like, why am I watching this show again? I don't get it. And now it seems like it's coming to a focus, with the promise that there'll be a lot more, you know, exciting stuff happen over the next episode. So, like, I don't know whether that's better pacing. I got to see the whole season, but I don't know. It's right now, without these next two episodes, I'd say season 2 is weaker than season 1.
And I binge watched season 1, so that's, I feel like that another, is a factor.
So I didn't. I guess I kind of did. I started watching around week 8.
Okay. Yeah. Which is right where it fell off for you.
Yeah. And well, but that so, is that because the right. I altered the structure of my watching, like,
it or could is it be... because the show just slowed down?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I do feel roughly the same. I think season 1 to this point has been much more focused and therefore much stronger than season 2.
And that's not
it's
saying...
not like a True Detective thing where season 1 was amazing, season 2 sucked.
Right.
Hard.
Oh, no.
This is still really good. It's just, I wish there was more focus.
Also, I will say that I think some of the best stuff in the whole series is in this season. Like, I don't know if there's anything as good, although that heroin episode is pretty fucking good.
It was real good, yeah.
And what's her face in the trunk was really good. But, like, was it better than the Full House episode?
It's very different.
I mean, because that's what I'm saying. Like, that's one of the finest moments in the show, and it's in season two. So,
and I think one of the finest moments in the show actually happens this episode as well. Mm. I think the very last scene is outstanding.
Sure.
Just incredible. But we'll get to that.
Okay.
So, Darlene and Sisko are in the waiting room of the hospital where they've taken Vincent to get care. Darlene tells Sisko about the time she was kidnapped as a child, and she kind of enjoyed it. And that's intercut with Elliot impersonating a police officer and faking an attempted suicide report to get the phone carrier to give him a location on that phone that Joanna has been getting calls from. And in the meantime, he's also getting emergency messages from Angela. He's questioning whether Mr. Robot could have lied about Tyrell. And he decides there must be something in this room that Mr. Robot needs, and he asks us to help him find it, which I thought was pretty awesome.
I was of two minds because I said mockingly earlier in the season, like, are we going to get Dora the Explorer level, you know, or like a Peter Pan clap for Tinkerbell levels of audience engagement? And they just did it. They just nakedly.
But you have this running dialogue from Elliot to us the entire time. It's not like it's out of nowhere.
No, I know. But it struck me a bit funny. But it's asking you to solve this mystery. And I'm sure, have you seen, like, do you want to talk about that stuff right now, or do you want to...
Because there's... Sure.
I want to talk, before we get to the Easter egg, I want to talk about this thing with Darlene. Mm-hmm. This trip to Coney Island, is it the same trip that Ellie got shoved off the pier? How many times...
I have no idea.
Because the thing is, she used a lot of language that was from the Full House episode, where it's like, it's the... What's their last name? Elliot, the Anderson. Is it Anderson?
Alderson.
Yeah. It's the Alderson family outing, which is what, you know, Mr. Robot said he was doing on the Full House episode. And, you know, she talks about this all being about Elliot and then her going missing and then her father. You know, Mr. Robot seems, if we can mesh the loving father with what we know about his violent outburst, kind of unstable. Like something like losing his daughter might cause him to shove his son off a pier or something like this.
Maybe.
I don't know, but it's significant that these are nexuses of these bad memories. Also, the thing that really puzzled me is I looked in as Claudia Kincaid. Did you do any research on this? So this is a character from a children's book called From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler. And it's a story of this 12-year-old Claudia who decides to run away from her home very happily because she thinks her parents don't appreciate her and doesn't like them, and she takes her brother, and they live in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and they hide out there, like it's an adventure story that
Ben Stiller made a movie about this.
I actually think I've read this book, or what it was read to me back in grade school. But the kids camp out, and they evade the guards, and how they live, and how they build their little nest here, and then the museum is gifted this angel statue. And the kids are able to track down this mystery to who donated it, and they find this woman who is the Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler, who has donated this unknown Michelangelo to the museum. It's worth, like, you know, it's a priceless thing, and she donates it. And I don't know. I don't know exactly what all the meta here is, but the important thing, and the angel thing's probably important too, but the important thing is you've got this woman, this girl who is running away from home because she's unappreciated. Why does Angela use that name? That seems like something Darlene, that would be more of a Darlene pseudonym.
Right.
So, and also if you had to give like someone who is a Lolita type character in this season, I would say would be Angela, even though Darlene's the one using the Lolita pseudonym in her hacker alias. So what the fuck is going on here?
I wish I knew. I mean, I wish I had even a guess for you. I don't know.
We've talked about how, like, you know, these characters seem to be shadowy reflections of each other. Angela's always wearing, or traditionally wears white, and she's got the name Angela, Angel. You know, Darlene is the more darker character. But then they do this twist. Like, is it possible that we are led to believe it's Angela trying to get a hold of him, and it's actually Darlene texting him? And if so, what does that mean?
Because they met. I mean, Angela and Elliot met. Unless he's seeing Angela and it's actually Darlene.
Are they the same person?
I mean, who knows at this point? But
no, that can't be right. But it's super interesting that they gave all this backstory and then they gave the Claudia Kincaid pseudonym to Angela. Yeah. Like, what is that? It's like I'm driving myself crazy trying to think, what is he trying to tell me?
Yeah, I don't know.
So let's talk about the Easter egg.
Okay. I've seen a couple of points that people are trying to pick up on. One, so I guess there was an interview with, was it Sam? Was it
no,
Sam
it wasn't Sam. It was the, one of the other writers or maybe a cinematographer or
Director.
Because he writes
something.
And directs everything, but he's something in some kind of showrunner involvement.
Yeah. So this guy gave, I think it was like an email interview, mm-hmm. Or a text interview. And he wrote this big long paragraph talking specifically about this scene. And there were weird misplaced like capital letters scattered through this paragraph. And if you combine them, they all spell bottom right.
Yeah. Like all the capital letters in his long paragraph response about what this Easter egg is about spells bottom right.
Right. So now people are looking in that scene, checking the bottom right corner at different points during it. And they found a couple of things that seem like they could be clues. One is a book that's open on his table.
Right.
The
it's
other
got a spotlight
is,
shining on it.
Right.
Somehow they've been able to find out not just what book, but what page it was open to.
Right.
Do you want to talk about that first or talk about the other possibility?
Well, the other possibility is just a stack of mail that's on the floor.
Which, that was at the beginning of the scene.
Right.
If you start the pan at the beginning, look at the bottom right, there's a huge stack of mail, you know, from like people, you know, like him, he's been gone a long time. There's a buildup of mail being thrown through the mail slot. Mm-hmm. The significance of that is, you know, Leon told Elliot to wait for a letter from White Rose mm-hmm. or the Dark Army on Tuesday. Is that, and Elliot has almost like seemingly forgotten about that.
I think that letter has been, I think that has been explored and over with. I think that
when?
Was the letter that he was getting to leave prison. The letter that said, you're released.
Hmm.
I think that's done with. I think that's
okay.
A dead end.
I don't know. Maybe. That, now you got me sucked because I'd forgotten about that. But a lot of people
are letter
saying,
to his therapist.
Right.
And she's like, oh, congratulations, all
but
this kind of stuff.
I didn't think that was a letter for, like, you'd be expecting. Well, I guess, I can't remember what exactly Leon said. My implication was that was going to be some communique for what happens next from the Dark Army.
I suppose it's possible, but that's not
But then
how
again,
I read it.
He's driving phase two, so. Okay, so that was one theory that if you started the pan at the beginning, look bottom right, there was a stack of mail. Then the end is the book. The book is the Mastering Microsoft Link Server 2013, which are, you know, there's tons. If you've been in the tech industry, you know that there are shit tons of these phone book thick volumes that are deep dives into the technology and cookbooks and solutions
all
and best
made
practices
entirely
and,
obsolete in about 2002.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I don't. I disagree.
Internet?
I think these books,
really?
Like, if you're trying to learn a new technology, this is way better than paging back and forth from a PDF and being able to, you know, dog ear stuff and have it open and stuff. I still think there's reasons to print these 1,000-page tomes that go out of date every fucking year. Interestingly enough, Microsoft bought out Skype. And this Link server is no longer, and which was funny because they were just really ramming it down our throats because I was still in the biz in this year. That's all been subsumed and it's now like Microsoft Skype server. These technologies are all blended together. But this book was open to these pages that are all about using PowerShell, which is the scripting language that Microsoft has to do like command line scripting and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
To use PowerShell to manipulate and alter roles and grant administrative power to non-administrative roles. Playing again with the idea of role, like, you know, role-based security, also, you know, different roles that you play inside one's head, different identities. Also could be a sign for how, what they're going to do with the next exploit, because Link server, you know, since it's become Skype, you can guess it's all about voice over IP and you know, audio communication technologies.
So what does Mr. Robot want with this book?
Does
he want to hide it? Is it something that Mr. Robot wants or something Mr. Robot doesn't want Elliot to see?
I don't know, because why with the spotlight?
Because I feel like nobody's going that direction with it, and that's a viable direction.
And I see none of these clues seem to really answer the question Elliot's asking, unless there's something in the White Rose thing explaining, unless there's a letter sitting there explaining what stage two is. Like, would a hacker really send a letter to somebody through the mail?
It doesn't feel right, but maybe.
Yeah. Then this is it. These Easter eggs as of 11:45 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Friday morning, unsolved.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's ideas and everyone's kind of identified them, but what did they mean, man?
I don't know.
Maybe this Easter egg you have to play underwater to understand it.
Oh, so man, they were going off on audio clues too.
Well, because
in
sure.
the subway there are a couple of posters.
And there's like that baby monitor noise throughout the whole scene with right. Joanna that like could easily be, you know, like the hang in there kitten poster encoding. It doesn't seem like people have ran it through, and it doesn't seem like there's anything. You can definitely see a block of. There are times in this is the soundtrack where you can see that there is encoding there, but no one really knows what that is supposed to mean. No one's cracked it yet.
Yeah,
I imagine by next week people will have.
Probably, I would imagine so, because they'll keep churning on this thing.
Sure.
In the meantime, but yeah, I'll point those posters out and talk about them a little more when we get to them. But, yeah, I mean, if I don't know how much more you want to talk about Darlene, but she realizes, you know, she's not special. She needs Elliot, and I guess what Sisko said really hit a nerve with her.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, a cool little moment where Elliot's making a Pringles can antenna, which we haven't actually seen them do before, even though it functions basically exactly the same as the thing Darlene was using at that hotel room.
Yeah.
Just a long range. Version. Yeah. Antenna.
Now, here's a technical problem I had with this. I've always understood that you had to have, to make the can antennas work, you have to have them on both ends. Because you're definitely boosting the signal that Elliot's device is putting out, but if he's piggybacking on someone else's router, don't they have to also get the return signal? Or else what the fuck is happening?
You know, I don't think that's true, and I actually never understood how that could work.
I always thought it had to be, like, if you had a Pringles can thing, like, you can set up a, like, 5 miles away, but you have to have them both pointed at each other like shotguns.
I don't think that's true.
Huh.
But it, I could not explain to you how that works.
Okay.
Because it's
I withdraw the objection if it's not true, but I've always, every time I, because I, you know, in the beginning, this was always used, like, when the internet was very uncommon to get, like, access to rural areas. Like, if you could find,
right.
like guys that had ham antennas or going up there and climbing on and putting a Pringles can up there, and then, like, you go someplace, if you had a buddy that lived downtown, you could get on top of their apartment or, like, in their window and point it at that, and then you could get a working internet connection over that.
Back in the days when I was considering doing some war driving.
Sure. This is when slash.org actually, right. people read it as a, you know, before Dig and Reddit killed it.
Yeah.
I don't understand how it worked, because you're just boosting, you know, it'd be like if you're across the
right.
Grand Canyon, one guy's screaming and the other guy's still talking at normal volume until he gets,
right.
that guy gets a megaphone too. It's a one-way communication.
Yeah, I don't quite understand how it works, but I don't think you actually do need it on both sides.
And it could just be, you know, I forgive them for making occasional technical mistakes for the sake of the story.
Sure.
So whatever.
Yeah. And I don't think there's really a need to sum up this hack because Elliot does it himself. He essentially mm-hmm. says, I'm impersonating an NYPD officer.
It's not even a hack. It's pure
social
engineering.
Yeah. Yep. And I'm just getting the carrier to trace this phone for me. That's as simple as that.
Yep.
But I really do love that he asks us. I know you have some minor problems with it, but I when they started going into this, I was like, yep, that's real cool.
Well, also,
playing a Where's Waldo with the audience here.
You know, that virtual reality experience, one of the core things of it was being in Elliot's room. And it's essentially
right.
the same.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, are these Easter egg alternative reality experiences converging to where they intend you to go through the, you know, virtual reality high-res 3D thing to uncover this?
Man, I should go try that. I have the cardboard.
Well, I saw a video of it, so where someone had taken that part out, and it looked like that the spotlight was not on.
Hmm.
So okay. that like makes the book extra significant.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping they'll figure it out by next week and we can report back. So Darlene and Sisko get no news about Vincent. it's going to be another hour before they'll know anything, so they decide to go get some food. Just a real quick scene talking to the nurse there. The key thing here is that the nurse meets them and sees them.
Also,
specifically Cisco.
No red lanterns this episode, but Cisco's wearing a bright red trucker cap.
That's kind of his look, his signature look, isn't it?
Yeah,
but... Or does he wear a lot of different hats?
I don't know. I'm just saying he's wearing a bright red hat on the episode where he likely got killed.
What's the red hat hacker? Is that like...
Red hat Linux. Used to be a Linux distribution. Right. Might still be. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is. I don't know what the red hats do. I'll tell you what black and white hats do, but... Elliot tracks the phone to a house that Joanna's goon says Tyrell would not be calling from. Mm-hmm. Any theories on where this phone is? I've got one.
People said it was it seemed like the most popular theory was that it's the CTO Knowles.
Scott Knowles.
That he's fucking with Joanna.
That's
which would
my
be kind of funny. That,
yeah.
And that they showed us enough backstory between these four that we know that we didn't know the whole story in season one, and they probably had more interactions than we know. So it's plausible that at some point, since they made it a point to show his wife and him remarking on her earrings, that I doubt they would tell the full story of him fucking the redhead triumphantly for them. But do they know enough? Does he know enough about this major mission gift giving that he's doing this to fuck with her?
Right.
That's
a good question.
Yeah.
And the one that I don't think we know the answer to.
And that's annoying because in a perfect show, I would confidently state that we already know the answer. We just haven't seen it. We just haven't put it together yet. Here, it's just as likely that four episodes from now, in the second episode of next season, we'll see the conversation where Scott Knowles gets the information he needs to pull off this hack, which I don't like. I don't like that at all. That's not a mystery. That's just... withholding information. That's like telling a kid, like, you know, how do babies get here? Well, you know, birds and the bees and storks are involved.
Right. Then they find out season three there are no storks,
and then later on find out it's actually putting a penis in a vagina. What Yeah, of course. How did you not put that together? Well, you told me the wrong information, asshole.
Yeah, I don't know. So I wonder how is the music box significant, or is it just to deliver that phone? Because he does give, like, the baby rattle.
It's multiple gifts.
Right.
There's all kinds of triumphs happening.
So
every time he screws a redhead, she gets a gift.
Oh, man. I don't know. My first instinct was Scott Knowles' house, because I'm trying to think of places that he wouldn't be, or that Government Issue Face Man thinks he wouldn't be.
That would definitely be
and
one of
them. Hanging out with Scott Knowles is one.
Yep. That's a very wealthy part of Manhattan, right?
I think so. I mean, it's right out there by Central Park, which is
sure.
A lot of the stuff around there is pretty.
But everybody in the movies
fancy.
Lives there. How can it possibly be expensive? Like literally everyone in the movies lives
there.
In
the movies, right? So I don't know. Were there any other interesting theories on who it might be, or was that pretty much the best one?
That was the best one. That it was actually Joanna's house. Although Elliot would know that, wouldn't he?
Maybe. He was just there, but...
The call's coming from inside the house.
Government Issue Face Man didn't sound like he couldn't have been there because that's where Joanna was.
Yeah,
it was
like
more
it
like
makes no sense.
That he's not going to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like we just came from there and he wasn't there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, the FBI bust into Cisco's apartment, apparently tracking him via the cab service. They finally have his identity, which we see as Francis Shaw.
Yeah, we finally get the... That's why he's called Cisco. Francisco.
Oh,
Cisco.
Okay. I thought he was good with routers. the sketch also...
Well, yeah, it doesn't... Obviously, if his, last name was Pencil Dick, he probably wouldn't have gone as Cisco. The fact that it has an association with, hacker culture technology probably helped.
So this composite sketch of him also makes it out onto the news, and the nurse at the hospital sees it and goes, "Oh, that's the guy."
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any information on the significance of this name, Francis Shaw?
Mm-mm.
So apparently that is the real middle and last name of the actress who plays Shayla from season one.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Her middle name's Frankie, and her last name's Shaw.
Okay, so that's just a Easter egg in the purest form. It's just a wink at the show itself.
It seems like
doesn't
it.
Really have any.
Breaking Bad did this a couple times.
Sure,
with
sure.
Using real actors' names as
right.
character names
as homages. Yeah,
yeah. Sure. I think that's just an Easter egg. No
okay.
real information. Then Elliot gets another message from Angela saying, "Hey, we need to meet up. Real urgent." Darlene decides they should go on the run, and Dom arrives at the hospital and questions the nurse, who tells her that they left after she told them to come back in an hour,
mm-hmm.
and her boss decides they're not coming back.
Right.
Let's burn this place, too. He's just, man, he is a the true pyro. Well, I don't know his name. Hot boss. Hot FBI.
Right. Is it Santiago?
Santiago? Maybe.
I think, yeah, her boss, whatever her boss is, yeah.
I don't give a shit about his name. He's just the FBI dude.
Hot boss.
Hot boss.
Hot boss in the world.
So Darlene's really making me raise my eyebrow here because she's all about this. We need to go on the run stuff. I'm sick of looking over my shoulder.
Hit from afar.
Too fucking bad. Did you not realize you were going to have to look over your shoulder for the rest of your goddamn life once you pulled this hack off, Darlene?
My interpretation is she's saying, I'm tired of trying to pretend like, of keeping the normal life routine and acting like that. So, like, I just, like, if we're going to fucking be, look, let's just go into hiding. Let's commit to the terrorist lifestyle.
Okay.
Like, where we're, you know.
Sure. I think she needs to.
Yeah.
Because they're in some serious trouble here,
sure.
obviously. Then Elliot meets with Angela, who tells him that she's turning herself in. She won't say anything to the FBI about F Society, but she's going to tell them that she planted the femtocell. They hug, and Elliot kisses her before leaving and before two figures approach Angela ominously. There's some intercutting here with Darlene and Cisco deciding to just sit tight for a bit and Dom realizing they're still close by.
We got to talk about this on the subway. Angela sitting beneath a sign that is advertising this product called Phase.
Both of them are.
Oh, they're
Elliot
both, okay.
and Angela. There's two of them, yeah.
Excellent audio for the discerning listener, which is another mm-hmm. clue to look at the audio. And again, there are definitely some things there, but no one knows exactly what or what they mean at this point. And also, Phase is like, you know, we talked with what we're curious about is Phase 2. So it seems like if you could put all...
Phase is an audio term as well.
Yeah, true. If you put all this together, maybe these clues point us to what is actually going on in Phase 2. But to date, again, at the time of us sitting down to put podcasts, no one has cracked the code.
So we do, like... We talked about the spectrogram thing that happened earlier with this hanging there.
Kitty,
whatever it was, that happened. That was all via the audio. People pointed out that these posters were actually in episode 4 as well.
The hanging there
this
one?
Season?
Huh.
What?
The hanging there one?
No, the Phase ones. Because they're on the subway multiple
sure.
times.
Okay.
And these are still, they're on the subway when they're shooting. So like...
Because there's a lot of stuff and a lot of things. Like Angela's motivational posters were part of one of the Easter egg websites that you could
right.
hack and uncover.
Yeah. So people are wondering, like, do we need to look specifically in this episode? Maybe they were trying to give us a hint about the kitty thing earlier on. There's a lot of confusion because some people are trying to do this phasing thing where if you have audio that's slightly out of phase, you can kind of cancel out most of...
That's how, yeah, noise-canceling headphones work.
Right.
One wave is coming to your ear, it sends out an opposite wave, and just like in the ocean,
and you
when
only
those two
get
meet,
the audio.
It goes flat. Yeah.
Yeah. So people are trying to do that with the audio of the episode and see if there's anything hidden in the track. So far, nothing has come up, I guess.
I've seen analysis where it suggests that there is things in the track, people just don't know how it's encoded.
Right.
So, like, there does seem like there's a couple blocks where you can see... the audio go way outside the normal spectrums and mm-hmm. it looks like it's data. But again, that just shows that there's something there. It's kind of like the same way. Like I'm still convinced there's information buried in those motivational posters. Like two of them were like, most of them were like a few hundred K. A few of them were several megs. That implies that they had a payload inside them. Because they weren't any bigger or higher resolution than the other copies. So I guess maybe this is the second Easter egg we haven't quite cracked.
Mm-hmm.
I think people just gave up on those. It's like, well, you know, maybe they're just sloppy encodings. I don't know.
Seems like it. Yeah, they were talking about, oh, well, the resolution's higher, so maybe there's nothing. So I like here that Dom, when she figures this out, that they're still close by, just fucking leaves.
Yeah.
She's not going to say, we need to get everybody out of here. They're coming back. Like, go to her boss again. It's fruitless
mm-hmm.
entirely. She's been doing that for episodes now.
Yeah.
She's like, fuck it. I'm going to go out here and I'm going to find these people myself. That was a nice little touch. And then the brownouts in the streets when she's kind of just out there trying to find them really set a tone. Like, just having the lights go out around her and, like, flash back on. I don't know. They're really building to this final scene that I think is excellent.
Right. Well, the other thing in this conversation, Angela's saying, you know, we're a long way from the night we were going to get high and watch Back to the Future 2.
Uh-huh.
There was other people claiming in that panorama thread that you can see the box for Back to the Future 2 on the shelf, and it looks like there's a little piece of paper sticking out of it. Now, it's not the bottom right, and I never could, because there's the other thing, is I couldn't see the pile of mail until someone processed it, brightened it, and, like,
right.
did a lot of shit to it, because, yeah. like, I don't know if my eyes are bad.
Scenes are dark.
Those scenes are super fucking dark, so, like, you know, people are saying that that is the back to, and the other thing is, like, that Microsoft Link server, I don't see how they made that cover out. Like, a guy's like, here it is on a table, and here it is on the mic. Real, like, okay. Oh,
they did it in the VR thing, is my understanding. They went into the VR, and they
it was a higher
either got up close to it, well, or no, it was on it the shelves.
It was laying closed on, like, a nightstand or something.
Right.
I mean, I looked at all those methods. I didn't see how they got the cover from that, but it's unmistakable. I recognize the pages. Like, it's low res. You can't read them, but you can see the paragraphs. And there's, like, example code is all indented, and they have these gray mm-hmm. like tip boxes. And it is that page out of the books. But, like, how I'm amazed at how people can sift through this and find that.
Yeah, the amount of time it must
take.
Some
nerd had this server book in his bookshelf, and, like, I know where I've seen that before. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think this is the first decision Angela's made in a long time that I fully get, that I'm fully behind. Give yourself up, Angela. Just do it, because you're not built for this, obviously.
Well, the other thing about this Claudia character, she talks a mess about finding him at the museum
mm-hmm.
and who he was seeing. Like, yeah, what, and like that's seemed like a direct reference to that book.
Yeah, could be.
The scattered files of Mrs. Whatchamacallit.
Uh-huh.
Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler. So there's that's super significant. I don't know what the fuck it means. That's like the third Easter egg I don't understand in this thing.
The one other important thing in Angela's scene in that subway is one... Well, I mean, do we want to talk about the relationship between Angela and Elliot?
Well, Angela seemed genuinely affected by the kiss.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, like, is that just her having not realized, I guess, how Elliot felt about her, or questioning whether Elliot's intentions are there, because he's crazy.
It would be super beneficial for him to have her back off this whole I'm going to rat myself out thing.
How paranoid is she, essentially?
Well, and how well-founded is her paranoia? Because right. I can definitely see a universe in which Elliot kisses her because his crazy mental arithmetic tells him that this is the best chance he's got to keep her quiet. Now, yes. I also think he's in love with her.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think this is a nice moment between them, actually. He knows this is probably the last time he's going to see her, because she's going to prison.
So you're just taking it straight up.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's probably a mistake on this show, mm-hmm. I'll admit. But, yeah, I think the relationship that they've built, they haven't really done a ton to build it. They've just been kind of dancing around it. But
uh-huh.
I feel like that tap dance that they've done with Elliot and Angela, this moment feels right for them as kind of a farewell.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. That's just me. And then they pull this essentially who's at the door trick again, which, come on, is that your only trick you have for ending a scene?
Yeah.
Mr. Esmail.
Especially when they're both heavy breathing and...
Yeah, I just... I really don't like the end of these scenes when they're just like, oh, who is it?
And we don't, I have no idea. Like, I don't think I've seen these people, or if they have, they've been minor characters. I was like, well, is this the black guy that was the FBI undercover guy? And
nah, that dude had hair. This guy looks bald as the day he was born.
His head's a little bit lumpier. That guy's better looking. I honestly have no idea who these people, and I don't care because they haven't given me a reason to care.
So,
other than Angela might be in trouble. Was Angela wearing a wire in the scene? That was a popular piece of speculation.
That's also a good question. I don't think so.
Because that's also a tease at the audio for the discerning listener.
Right.
And she's like, essentially, hey, Ellie, I haven't seen you in a long time. What about that crazy crime that we all pulled off?
Why did you start F Society?
Yeah.
And
play it cool, Angela.
He doesn't directly answer that question, but he says, I didn't want to get you involved.
Yeah.
That's kind of an admission.
Kind of. Lawyers on both sides would have a field day with it, I'm sure.
Right. But so these people are actually a little more interesting than they seem at first, because apparently they've been lurking around Angela for episodes now.
These are figments of her imagination. They finally showed up 8 episodes into
Her psychosis 2 is presenting itself. Oh, God.
It's 2 middle-aged characters from Sesame Street you're going to find out. It's Mr. Roper and Carmilla? Was that the... I don't know. Whatever.
I don't know. And... Helen Hunt from Twister. They're both weather people, right?
Sure.
You're talking about Mr. Al Roper, yeah?
No, I was talking about the nice neighborhood guy from Sesame Street. Tell me you were allowed to watch Sesame Street.
I was. Okay. Yes. I think they need Oscar in there. I think that needs to be her.
Plus, you know, they're not picking up the trash.
That's true.
That would probably be
Oscar. Oscar's having a fucking field day out
there. Yeah, I was going to say, he's throwing a fit, but no, he's the true mastermind behind us all. He wants the whole world to be covered in trash.
So I guess like 4 or 5 instances, they've been hovering around Angela, kind of watching. And I don't know if they're FBI. We don't really know what they are.
Or?
No, throughout the season.
Did you notice this?
No. Someone else on Reddit went and did all their research.
Damn.
Found him.
You don't read this fucking subreddit every 8 hours. You miss some stuff.
Yeah, no shit.
That front page recycles like every 4 hours. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it's legit height of season 5 Breaking Bad insanity already.
Yep. Be interesting to see where that goes. So final scene, Dom tracks down Darlene and Cisco. She calls for backup and goes inside to confront him. But before backup can get there, the Dark Army shows up with an Uzi and lights up the diner they're all in. The gunman is clipped by Dom and kills himself before the cops can take him. And then after that's pretty much the end. After the credits, we get kind of a long audio sequence, which I think a lot of people are leaning into, analyzing that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's much there to really get. It's just the aftermath of this scene. Cops arriving and dealing with bodies and
little safety
gunshots.
Tip too. When dealing with police, not only do you put your hands up, get on the ground, just scream, just keep screaming green.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might save your life.
Shout green and pull out your wallet real quick, and you're good.
Yep, get on the ground.
You might even become an FBI agent doing that. I don't know.
He's deputized on the spot.
Uh-huh.
Got some moves, kid. You shot green like I've never seen anyone shot green before. Here's your badge. I thought, okay, street sign countdown, cute or awesome? Too cute or
street
awesome?
Street sign countdown.
You didn't notice this?
I didn't
this?
Notice what you're talking about.
So the crossing guard, as the guy gets off the motorcycle, starts off at 11, and it counts down to 0, and then it goes to no as he opens fire.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Like I said, too cute or awesome? I really couldn't tell you.
I think it's kind of cool, because you already know what's going to happen there, right?
Uh-huh.
It's not like we're wondering, is he going to shoot the place up?
Yeah.
He's got an automatic weapon. Yeah, I think that's kind of neat.
I thought so, too.
I think this whole scene is just really well constructed.
Yeah.
Like, from the lighting to the position of the camera, just, like, being able
to
bring...
To the position of the ketchup bottles?
Right. Let's save that for just a second.
Okay.
I want to praise the scene a little
get to
bit
the
more. Because I really like how it enables, like, not only stuff to come from the right side of this scene when we see the guy kill himself, but it also enables like the Dark Army to kind of come from a different area of the frame, kind of giving you the significance of these different factions. I just really love it. And the close-ups on Dom, and then the just silence while she's in there saying whatever she's saying to these guys.
Popular theory is that next episode is going to open up with her coming into the diner and having whatever conversation she has with these two.
Okay, so like the other side of it?
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
kind of like the Joanna thing this episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That works.
What the other thing I want to talk about before we start talking about the forensics of this is shit. I completely forgot. Never mind.
Shouldn't Dom have waited for backup?
Oh, so there you go. That's exactly what I wanted to talk to you about. Okay. Some people said that the whole point of the Femto Cell was that the Dark Army are listening to the FBI. When she called for backup, they appeared. And people are like, well, that was like less than 20 seconds. But then I think if you put the timeline together, that the Dark Army was at the hospital the second that the bolo went out. The hospital's only a few blocks away from that diner.
Yeah.
Darlene calls, or I'm sorry, Dom calls, the Dark Army gets a location fix. You can get over, you can cover four blocks on a motorcycle and nothing.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear them roar, they're like rip roaring up. So I think the timeline works out. If you grant that the Dark Army were on them and at the hospital, they were waiting at the hospital just like the FBI was.
Right.
And they got a phone call and they motored a couple blocks from there and then shot the place up. I think the timeline works really well.
I think that makes sense too. They'd be watching.
I didn't even
Cisco.
Question it, but I saw some people doing it and I wanted to talk about that in case anyone else had that same problem.
Okay. Do you want to get into the forensics now?
Sure.
Because a lot of people like
people
slowed
went
this scene
frame
down,
by frame and magnified it. It looks like Cisco's dead for sure.
Oh, he's dead.
Because bullets hit him, his head explodes like a can of tomato sauce.
Uh-huh.
Same thing looks for Darlene, except for people notice that there was a ketchup bottle on the windowsill.
I don't think it's ketchup. I think it's salsa.
Okay, but whatever. It's a red bottle of something that's in the line of fire between and it's that is what's exploding and making the similar head explosions to Cisco, but it looks like Darlene might have survived.
Yeah.
If I'm betting, I'd say Darlene survives. Cisco is, unless that one South Park episode about Britney Spears, unless he's living as a brainstem and a tongue flap around in his neck.
Oh, my God.
He's dead.
Right.
He's dead.
Yeah, he's a goner. I think Darlene's alive. There's another thing that's slightly interesting. I don't know what it means, but it was kind of neat. I guess during these freeze frames, you can see if you go real, real slow, the Cisco's head explodes,
right,
the salsa
the
explodes, and then the sign goes out, but it goes out in a particular way where
it says Lupe's.
Lupe's turns into lies. Like the apostrophe goes out.
Yeah.
The P turns into an E. It's real conspicuous if you look at it.
The P gets blown out just to like the long portion of the P, the uncurved portion stays. So that's the I, and then, you know, Lupe's, the ESs.
So I don't know if that actually means anything or if that's significant.
So. That's fucking deliberate.
It seems like it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
What are the lies in this episode?
That both of them are dead? I don't know.
At some point, Sam Esmail needs to back up just a little bit, like get off the throttle a little bit, because you've already composed a situation where I can't trust anything that I see from the main character's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
maybe leave it at that.
The lies are all, you know, that broke the cool too cute barrier for me.
Okay. I can see that.
Because it's just there's nothing there. Lies, like there's fucking a million lies in every episode. That's not really anything new or interesting. That's just you patting yourself on the back, in my opinion.
So if Darlene does survive,
yeah,
assuming she does, she's going to be in FBI custody now, right? No two ways about it. She doesn't leave that diner
Well,
of her own volition.
Yeah, because the cops are just surrounding it.
No, they're already on the scene. It's too late. You think the Dark Army... I would imagine the Dark Army could get to her even in FBI custody.
They crashed an FBI party. They seem to be pretty fearless. That was on their soil, granted.
Especially if we want to say that her boss is dirty, the Dom's boss is dirty. That would be pretty easy.
How many Dark Army operatives do you think they have in New York City? That's the big question. Is this like a fucking Daredevil situation where they might have thousands?
Right. They're all hidden underground.
They're just digging them up from this giant mine. Just 100 tons of ninjas coming out every day. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Or is it like realistic where like how many shadowy operatives ready to die can you have in a foreign country?
It's a good question.
Like a half dozen, a dozen? Like what's a believable amount of those things?
I don't know. I would say maybe a few dozen. I mean, New York City's a big place.
Yeah. It's like sobering. Like, how many terrorists do we have in this country right now? The answer's not zero.
No, it's not zero.
I bet we'd all be... It's kind of like that picture of the beach when you see all the sharks swimming off. It's like, if you could see, like, all of them around, it would probably freak you out, but...
Right. Right.
That's the world we live in, people.
So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes with Darlene, because she's going to have to stand up to some questioning. At the very least, she might still be in danger from the Dark Army.
Sure.
Who knows? But that's it for the episode.
Hey, real quick before we get to feedback, I want to talk about ways you can support Bald Move. And it's important to do so because we wouldn't have a Mr. Robot podcast if we were not doing this full time.
Very true.
We're one of the few, fortunate few that are able to do the podcasting as a living. We are non-famous dudes from the Midwest who have lucked into this opportunity, but we do need continued support to keep doing it. You can do that at club.baldmove.com. And that's a way to directly support us for a very low cost. You can get access to a bunch of different bonus features, video feeds of our podcast, which, by the way, you could watch this recorded on Friday morning instead of waiting until whenever to hear it. VIP access to the forums, a bunch of different features, but the primary feature is we keep on doing what we're doing. You can also support us with Amazon, amazon.baldmove.com. Also, I just had this email. Someone asked us, like, I'm from the UK. How can I support you with Amazon? If you go to support.baldmove.com, there's actually a whole bunch of different international markets that we have. I know there's one in France, Italy, the UK, Germany, maybe one in Japan,
Canada.
But yeah, it's just go to, instead of going to amazon.baldmove.com, go to support.baldmove.com, and there's the link. Okay. Click it. But yeah, thanks for thinking of us that way. But the club or Amazon, either way, we really appreciate your support. Couldn't do it without you.
Feedback?
We have feedback, as is normal. You can send feedback in to robot@baldmove.com, or we have episode thread every week on the Mr. Robot subthread on our forums at forums.baldmove.com. James V.E. says, I was listening to a podcast called Reply All, and then an episode on tulpas, as it revealed a deeper layer to Mr. Robot for me. And if you recall, tulpas was also something that was discussed on X-Files on the latest reboot.
Yeah, I don't remember what that was.
Well, he's about to describe it. Basically, there's an underground movement on Reddit, and just pretty much in the internet and life in general, that purposely creates and nurtures alternate personalities in people's minds, and even allows them to quote-unquote front or take over as the lead personality if they so desire. The alternate personality is called a tulpa, and the people who practice this cultivation are called tulpamancers. In this case, Mr. Robot is a tulpa, and Elliot is the tulpamancer. Many tulpamancers have multiple tulpas of different genders and species. He linked me to the subreddit and some in reading material, and I gotta say, this shit is batshit crazy. This is other kin stuff.
So it's people who are purposely trying to develop alternate personalities.
What they're doing is acting and role playing, but instead of calling it that, they're saying they're actually creating a real alternate, distinct, sentient persona within themselves,
with hope that that will like take hold in their mind and become a real thing.
In fact, there's a thread that he linked to me debating about whether like it's immoral to create a tulpa and then never manifest it. Like if you just like, I'm bored of tulpas, I'm not going to do it. Well, you just created a sentient person and then deleted it. I mean, it's like the guys saying, like, I fucking am a dragon on the spiritual plane because when I get angry, I like to go row, row. And when I get horny at night, I fuck myself with a dragon-shaped dildo. Like, you're not a dragon, man.
Right. You're a man, man.
Now, play this 30 years from now when there's, like, other kin have won rights to fucking be tiger people in public and you can't fire someone because they come on with dragon horns and wings and I look like the crazy racist homophobic shitbag because I just is a line in my mental stand where, like...
Sure. When Second Life becomes First Life.
My mind is open, but it cannot open to accept the fuck that this guy's a goddamn dragon or tiger or wolf or fox or whatever. Someone comes up, starts talking this tulpa shit, I think they should be on medication. So
okay,
but you can, but
I'm with you. This sounds,
but this is Mr. Robot. This
truly
is
truly crazy. To me.
Is now the question is, did Mr. Robot, you know, is this tulpa stuff interesting going forward? With predictive value, I don't know. Like it just depends on how into this tulpa shit Sam Esmail is. If he is, then I would suspect that you're eventually going to have some interesting revelations. But I read about an hour's worth of this stuff, and I just, like, you know, mouth agape, not open and receptive, just shaking my head like, wow, the human experience is vast, like, and deep and broad.
My experience watching mukbang videos.
Blakey says, when Tyrell and his gang first walk into All Safe, Elliot says in a voiceover, E-Corp is the largest conglomerate in the world. This is, I think, discussion about, because sometimes I cut and paste the email and I forget that the subject matter is kind of, the subject line is the thesis. And I think the thesis was evidence for Elliot being a robot. When Tyrell and his gang first walk into AllSafe, Elliot says in a voiceover, E-Corp, the largest conglomerate in the world. They're so big, they're literally everywhere. A perfect monster of modern society. The E might as well stand for evil. In fact, after thorough, intensive self-programming, waka waka, that's all my mind hears, sees, or reads when they pop up in my world. Blake continues, if Elliot is indeed a self-reprogramming android, Mr. Robot moves from delusions to management control program used to guide his actions. This program is probably injected into a system by the Dark Army to regain control of Elliot and get him back on track after his morphine use caused memory loss, potentially derailing their next phase.
How does a morphine use cause any problems for an android?
Well, you don't know what they could, he could be a cyborg.
Okay, well, that's not the theory here.
Well, I think, look.
We're going to allow them to use android and cyborg interchangeably?
If we find out that that Elliot is a cyborg, no one can call shit on the android people. That, to me, that's similar enough and outside of the...
How much of a cyborg?
Like a Lobot cyborg. He's got a central processing unit in his brain that's wired into central nervous system.
Okay. Not like he's got hearing aids.
And no, I'm not talking like $6 million man. Run. I'm talking about his wetware.
Right. I mean, we have cyborgs out there right now.
Yeah, sure.
In modern society. They're just not sophisticated in any kind of way.
Right.
So, and it's not like neural cyborgs.
No, I'm not saying he's got an artificial arm. I'm not saying he's got a cochlear implant. I'm not saying.
Okay.
I'm saying he's got he's not a pacemaker, not a, one of those fucking lever legs. I'm talking about he's got.
They scooped out his brains and replaced it with
the one dude's fake leg. The one dude's artificial leg may be an early hint to Elliot's cyborg nature.
Yep. Vincent's a cyborg. That's the thing they discovered at the hospital. This man has no human parts. He's an android, as a matter of fact.
Internal bleeding. That's his motor oil leaking out.
Beverly Crusher's back there going, I don't know what to do with this thing.
He needs to take him down to fucking engineering. Get Geordi up here.
Yep.
Who also, another cyborg.
Absolutely, he is.
That fucking banana clip. QED. all right, let's get back to Blake's point. F Society didn't need Dark Army to complete the hack. The Dark Army needed Elliot. The subroutine Elliot used. Okay, all this stuff is postulation on a theory, which I don't care. Elliot keeps going on and on about being normal, almost like he wants to be a real boy. That's fine, because I definitely think that it could be true that he's not a cyborg or android and also be like a Pinocchio figure.
Oh, yeah.
That's fine.
Personality-wise, sure.
Another thing, like this, has anyone ever seen Elliot eat anything? And that's a good question, because I know he's gotten, like, you know, the whole framing event in the first few episodes was he's sharing meals with Elliot.
Right.
But was he ever actually eating?
I think he was, but I'm not certain. He?
Yeah. I got this email while I was sleeping last night and have time to go back and rewatch all the Leon scenes. But this seems like this is either something you can prove or disprove. Like, if Elliot's eating, then I don't think he's an android, but can always,
Data.
Always pivot to cyborg. Yeah.
Data. Eat all the time. Eat.
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't. Eating is not necessarily the conclusive proof that you're not an android.
A nice dodge would be the fact that he is a cyborg. He is like some kind of prototype cyborg that was scooped up by the Dark Army because he was brain dead after his dad pushed him out of a window. And he didn't have any parents that were able to look at. I mean, I was saying this as a joke, but this is starting to make sense in my head.
Uh-huh.
He's essentially an orphan. he's in, you know, like state custody, and Dark Army swoops in there and slices and dices his head, and he's just a patchwork quilt inside there.
Yeah, maybe so. I'm not buying it, but maybe okay. So.
All right. Not even buying it for a dollar, huh? Mm-mm. Lisa says, I know you've been talking about why Angela has been so hard to figure out this season. Something I think that is going on with her is that she's covering up her real self and emotions with this fake Ice Queen persona. A big clue to this was in the Full House episode when we see her crying at her mother's funeral in the opening credits. As soon as she realizes the camera is on her, she completely transforms her face into the cold, deadpan expressions we've seen from her this season. I think her reliance on the positive affirmations is also a way of covering up her self-doubt and true feelings with these generic positive sayings. Possibly sleeping with old guys is another coping strategy to deal with her pain. I got a hot take on that. I don't. What is not a coping strategy? What if that's like she's earning her old guy fucking reps? Like if she went right to Philip Price, that guy whips out his fucking Slim Jim and she just throws up. Violently, explosively. She's like, okay, I started with Duck Phillips. You know, it's kind of gross.
He's but
it's
like working. Fit,
it's like working your gag reflex. You know, right? you start off with your finger, and pretty soon you got a sword you can swallow.
Oh my god!
I didn't really mean to relate those concepts, but sure, if you want, she's getting old guy fucking reps. She's working herself up to Philip Price so she can fuck him and Khaleesi him.
Wow. Yeah.
Dragons.
I'm just gonna go with it. Absolutely, that's what she's doing. Of course.
Anyway, yeah, I think. I don't like. I've kind of changed my mind on Angela. I don't have a problem with what they're doing with her character at this point. Like I completely buy what Lisa said here. It seems completely consistent with everything I know from her 8 episodes in.
Don't lie here.
All right, Chris say just a heads up. My dad had a bout with throat cancer a few years back, and he actually used morphine lollipops. They look exactly like the ones the DDP eats as well. For my dad, they provided morphine while he could not eat due to the radiation going on in his throat. This doesn't mean that it is what she's eating, but in the words of Mythbusters, I would call it a theory plausible.
Okay. I mean, morphine doesn't really change the form of a lollipop, right? So
nah,
I wouldn't expect him to look any differently.
So it's still an unsubstantiated theory, but it's actually a thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
We've confirmed the thingness of it, just like we confirmed that Ray Dalio's machine was hackable right before we found out that was all bullshit. So,
yeah, it's like
I look forward to the first 5 episodes. She just storms. The first 5 minutes, she's going to storm in to Lupe's and say, "Look, this popsicle, not morphine. People think it is because they want to hate on me as a character, but I just like lollipops. Fuck you." And then gunfire. That's what's going to happen next episode.
I just didn't want you to get the wrong impression.
I don't want you to get the wrong opinion about, sure, I talk to my computer, but I don't have a fucking morphine lollipop problem.
She says this
problem.
To 2 perfect strangers.
Yeah. I know what you were thinking. I know what you were thinking. Melanusk says, just wanted to mention something about the Elliot being Tyrell theory that I don't think I've heard anywhere else yet. I think we can safely say that they weren't the same person at the beginning of the series, but if we follow the theory that Elliot killed him, then we can assume Tyrell became a part of him right after he was killed. If neither Elliot nor Mr. Robot know about the Stage 2 thing, I think Tyrell is the one who knows, and that will be the next reveal, potentially this episode or in episode 11 or 12.
I thought we had talked briefly about
this. We did, but I wanted to give credit to this because I had never heard of this theory, and I do think that's probably the best way to square all the hard edges of the Elliot is Tyrell is Mr. Robot theory. That kind of like in, you know, another comparison to Breaking Bad. Walter subsumed some of the people that he's murders abilities unconsciously, not abilities, their predilections.
Yeah, their traits.
Their affectations. Sure. That Mr. Rob or the Elliot might have done that with Tyrell. Murdering him was such a out-of-the-box warping experience that he then took his perceived persona onto himself.
Right. And that does make a lot more sense, honestly. I don't know if that's where they're necessarily going with it, but we'll see.
I'm still not exactly ironically, but increasingly seriously repping the idea that somehow Mr. Robot and Elliot and Tyrell are all the same people. But
well, that would work at that point, right? I mean, if they became the same person later, if they fused,
you know, although there's a lot of explanation, like, then how does Elliot know so much about, like, Joanna? How did he met Joanna before? Like, did he kill Tyrell, make a Tyrell suit, and show up on Joanna's doorstep the next day? Because as soon as he gets out of Tyrell's car, you know, he runs into her, and they have this weird conversation that we've speculated so much about.
Right. Well, maybe he met her in the course of doing whatever he's doing with Tyrell, like doing the hack.
Like on the way to
Tyrell's
society.
Like, oh, hey, I want you to
meet Joanna. She's super hot.
No, but
she might want to fuck you. I might want to fuck you.
I got to stop
at home
and
get
some Cheetos. This is going to be a long night.
What's your thoughts on pegging?
no, but incidentally,
she's into Cheetos fingers, man. That's the one thing that drives her crazy.
She loves it. Loves it.
Loves the Cheeto fingers. Okay. David M., my sister and I have been discussing the possibility that Tyrell is a bastard son of Mr. Robot. I like this a lot.
Tyrell is a bastard son of Mr. Robot. Okay.
The father.
So a long-lost brother to Elliot.
Obviously, we call this theory the Tyrell Snow theory. During the TGIF flashback episode, Mr. Robot refers to Tyrell in the trunk as my baggage. Mm-hmm. Then in Hacking Robot Tonight, Rami mentioned the two living members of Elliot's family and Christian Slater cut in and said that he knows about, obviously foreshadowing there will be a big reveal of the Elliot family member. Do you know of any other evidence to support this theory? I think so. Last week I was trying to put the I was trying to connect this theory that the only people that appeared in the TGIF episode in the car were his blood relations. The only exception of that is Tyrell, except if, and I was going from the, well, that's actually an aspect of Mr. Robot, or Elliot. Angela appeared in the episode, but only in the credit sequence. No,
she's
in
the
also,
store.
So sure, but, yeah. But it's still true to say, I mean, that's the thing, like, this is like God in the gaps. Like, you know, God made everything. Well, he didn't make rainbows. That's just
right.
Light shining and through water. Well, he
Gideon
still
made, was in it, too. It's like...
Yeah, like, well, but who was in the car? Gideon leaned, you know, he was a cop that pulled him, right?
Maybe Gideon's his uncle and Angela's his other sister. And...
Yeah, that's the problem with these theories is, like, you try to fit the facts to meet the theory instead of trying to develop theories from the facts. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously I'm repping a crazy one, so I'm guilty of it as well. I don't know of any other evidence to support these, but I thought these were really interesting ones, too. Especially now, the Rami thing is, that's meta. Because he's on a show talking about it, and I could believe an actor saying that he knows about to, like... Because I'd do the same thing on a spoil... When I'm trying to not spoil things, sometimes the things you say and don't say can be misconstrued as spoilers. So if I say something, I might quickly cover something else or even plan to do that just to add a little bit of confusion to the issue to keep the spoilers safe for people.
Yeah.
It could just be him reflexively doing that on this show. You know, I'm like, shit, Sam Esmail might have, I don't know. I haven't read the scripts for season 3. Mm-hmm. So it's evidence, but I don't know if it's strong evidence. Anything else, or should we move on?
Nope.
Adam from Wales. On my main topic from this email, I'm beginning to get concerned that Mr. Robot could grow to become quite an unsatisfactory and annoying show. This is the Aaron concern. Mm-hmm. The concept of the unreliable narrator is always a tricky line to walk, as it can leave the audience feeling as though they have been lied to the whole time, see The Usual Suspects, and thus we can feel duped when a twist is revealed. In the case of Mr. Robot, not only do we have an unreliable narrator, not only do we have a mentally unstable, unreliable narrator who is prone to hallucinating, but we have an unreliable narrator who himself sometimes doesn't know that he is being unreliable. My main concern is that this could lead to some completely inexplicable batshit ending that we are effectively forced to swallow with the justification of, well, Elliot's crazy, or it was all in his head. Do you guys think that such a narrative device means that we could see some sloppy writing and storytelling as Esmail and company have Elliot's mental instability as a get-out-of-jail-free card? What is your concern level on this, Jim?
I'm definitely worried about that because it feels like they really enjoy these tricks that they're playing.
And I don't think it's fair to say it's sloppy writing, because I think the verdict is in the S-mail can write. It's just this, just like time travel, this shit's hard to do right. And one minor misstep is not sloppy writing, it's just a mechanical construction that, like, you know, it's like if the SpaceX rocket exploded last week. I guarantee it wasn't a result of sloppy work.
Right.
It's just people trying to do really hard things with zero room for a margin of error.
Yeah.
So Esmail's rocket could explode not because he's a sloppy writer, just because it's really fucking hard, as you outlined, to do these unreliable narrator stories. The promise of them and the potential is intoxicating.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like smoking heroin, you know? It's fun until it's not.
Yeah, and I... So there are a couple of ways that I feel like this thing can end, which is, A, it could end with some conclusion, some real conclusion to what I view as the main plot thread, which is the downfall of E-Corp and kind of the rebooting of society, right? It could end on that note.
Uh-huh.
Or it could end on the note of, let's do something real tricky with Elliot and with his mind, and let's like one last time for this show, let's blow the audience's
Cyborg.
Mind wide open.
He's a Lobot,
right? He's Lando Calrissian comes out of the shadows and he takes off his mask.
Uh-huh.
I feel like they might want to
recast
lean toward
Christian
the second
Slater
one.
As Billy D. Williams.
He's been Billy Dee all along.
He has.
Yeah. No, I feel like they might lean toward the second one because they do apparently like to play those tricks.
Uh-huh.
They're really leaning heavily into that.
Yeah.
So I'm a little concerned, yeah.
And again, it's not from it. I don't have faith in Esmail. It's just like, it's really hard. It's really hard. Werner Braun, Von Braun, or whatever his name, the rocket guy for the moon, he's a really good guy, but we blew up a lot of rockets to get to the moon, you know what I mean?
Werner Von Braun.
Yeah, wasn't that the guy who we captured from the Nazis, and he was the father of the American space program?
I don't know.
Is Werner Von something or other. Very. Huh. Anyway, sorry. You know who Lobot is, but you don't know. Brian H., the Tyrell-Elliot relationship seems to be one of the biggest puzzle pieces from these first two seasons. There's some speculation that they are one person, but I feel like past evidence in this latest episode proved that they are two different people. Mm. Wow, completely different interpretation than I had. I'm fascinated.
Lay it out.
Tyrell is different from Mr. Robot because no one has ever said Mr. Robot's name, except for last episode when Elliot himself said it, and people are like, the fuck? Uh-huh. Also, people knew who Elliot also knew Mr. Robot. Tyrell is mentioned by name by several people who do not know or recognize Elliot. I wonder if Tyrell getting mixed up with Elliot was purely accidental and Mr. Robot tried to run interference. Follow me down the rabbit hole for a moment. Tyrell catches wind that something is going on when he sees Elliot swapping folders in a meeting where Angela was kicked off the E-Corp account. He later offers Elliot a job in a room full of men in black suits. Elliot asks us if we're seeing the same men. I think Mr. Robot might be distracting Elliot, like with the ALF people, while trying to deal with Tyrell himself. We later see Mr. Robot trying to keep Tyrell away from F Society, a continuation of the earlier meeting we missed. It all comes to a head when Tyrell gets Elliot to talk. Elliot thinks they are going to stop it all, but Mr. Robot has to take over, launch the attack, and take care of Tyrell. So, this room, Elliot in a room full of men in black suits, that's easy to recontextualize as a hallucination fantasy, right? The thing that I'm desperate to do is to go back and watch season one and find the places where Tyrell first meets Elliot. Because I always thought it was weird that these executives, one of them would peel off and be like, oh, you're a hacker. I like hacker. And I got this conversation. And then did Tyrell ever...
You don't
think
that's the first time they met?
Well, no, it could be. Oh, but okay. It also could be Elliot, you know, giving birth to the Tyrell persona. Which is a real... But that's a real thing. It would have to go back further. Maybe it's the first time the Mr. Ty... It'd be like, you know, when Mr. Robot met Elliot on the subway. Is that their first meeting? Clearly not, but on this iteration of Elliot's psychosis, it's the first time they've met.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are concrete things here that say Tyrell had to be real at some point. I think he has to be real up to the point where he gets fired.
Yeah.
From his job. Like right up to the end of season one, I think he's got to be real. I don't think there's any other way to explain everything
happening. We were conclusively saying, like, well, Elliot can't be in prison because a real prison wouldn't let you do X, Y, and Z, and we found out that we just were, on a visual level, lied to. I don't know that you can... I'd have to go back and watch all the whole season, which I'm not going to have time to do while I'm covering this season, but I just would love to see it with the idea of trying to disprove that Tyrell and Elliot are not the same people and see if you can do it. Like, I think it's... If they're intending this theory, it's definitely something that's buried way in the subtext, but also has to be plausible. There can't be a definitive, you know, like if someone had a conversation with both Elliot and Mr. Robot, they were very careful to stage it to where they were both in each other's sight lines and everything kind of matched out. You would think if you went through and watched a season one with that theory in mind that, I don't know, maybe. It's something I want to do, though. Unless it's just the lid's blown off in the next two episodes.
Yeah, it might be.
Final email. Liz G says, the suspense and dread I felt as the scene switched between characters and dialogue continued was fantastic. I was on edge of my seat. I knew something big was about to happen, and as soon as I saw the motorcycle, figured shots would be fired.
Mm-hmm.
She wonders, is Vince the guy with the one leg? Is he the guy who Darlene made hand over his phone so she could stomp it? We had previously joked that the one-legged guy was Mobley.
No, that's not true.
It's now Vincent. Well, we were joking about Mobley, or at least I was.
Yeah, but we knew it wasn't him.
No, I didn't.
Oh,
I thought it was
okay. Actually.
I thought it.
I went back and I looked at his legs, and they were definitely there.
Well, yeah, in the intervening episodes, we've seen that he has two real legs, but yeah.
Right. Okay.
So,
yeah, Vincent's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which interesting, like that kind of implies maybe he was like a military vet.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, people lose their legs all the time. Or he got hit on a bike. Or he got a shark bit him off and bit his leg off. Yeah. Or I don't know why.
Construction accident. I mean,
yeah.
You do. I guess first instinct is a jump to combat,
especially since he seemed to plug into the hierarchy, like the hierarchical nature, and like right away.
Yeah,
but no, definitely that's the guy, and he's also the guy that got his phone stomped. So
yep.
That guy. That's all the email we got.
Okay, cool.
Robot@baldmove.com if you want to send us more, or forums@baldmove.com if you want to get on the forum stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to keep an eye on the Reddit stuff. Hopefully there will be some either audio clues deciphered, or they'll find out what they're really talking about in that scene where Elliot's encouraging us to look.
Yeah.
We'll definitely have updates on that next week. And who knows? I mean, next week it might, like you said, be blown wide open with Tyrell and with this Mr. Robot stuff. There might not be any need.
I just checked the subreddit to see if there's something that happened in the last 2 hours. The one thing that was interesting that I didn't get that's new on the page is, you know that video game that Joanna's bodyguard, the rubber face man, the government issue face
Micro
man?
Center.
That was Watch Dogs.
Okay.
Which is very meta if you don't know. That's a game all about like a Elliot type hacker, and he hacks cell phones and security systems, and it's a first person shooter kind of with that style.
Yeah.
So I thought that was, you know, that's just again a pure Easter egg. It's just a wink,
right?
A wink and a nudge.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll be back next week with, I guess they're not doing a double episode next week.
It was widely reported in a lot of, it was like on cable boxes and whatnot, but according to the hacking robot, they are going to have the part one and part two of the next episodes as two separate episodes that the air in two different weeks. I was trying to say away, like back, but back to backs aren't right.
Right.
Just in normal order. We got two more weeks of Mr. Robot, not just one with a double episode. And I'm kind of glad for it. Even though that's going to start overlapping my American Horror coverage, and I know you've got some ongoing overlaps, I would much rather do that than try to cram 2 hours of stuff into a single podcast.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, well, we'll be back with the second to last episode for season 2 next week. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. Bye.